Hello, everyone. This is Jessica.
And this is Claire.
And this, it'll only hurt a little.
Today, we're going to be talking to Gabby. Gabby has cystic fibrosis, an inherited life-threatening disorder that damages the lungs and digestive system. Cystic fibrosis affects the cells that produce mucus, sweat, and digestive juices. It causes these fluids to become thick and sticky. They then plug up tubes, ducts, and passageways.
We hope you enjoy today's episode, and we hope you
stay alive.
Hey, Gabby, how are you?
Hey, I'm good. How are you guys doing today?
We're doing good. Very excited to have you on here.
I'm excited. I've never done a podcast. This is my first. I've only listened to some, so I am nervous.
Yeah. No, you'll be fine. Everyone's nervous. I think we're nervous even sometimes.
Yeah, we're definitely nervous.
Sweaty palms and several. Okay, so tell us about your health journey.
All right, so I have cystic fibrosis. I'm also mostly deaf. So what the heck is cystic fibrosis? But like from here on out, I'm just going to refer to cystic fibrosis as CF because that's just kind of what people refer it to. It's just for shorter, a little bit easier.
Yeah, for us, it's like instead of the whole postural orthostatic tachycardia syndrome, we're like, it's just POTS.
Got it. Yeah,
way
just easier. Because then you kind of lose people when you get to like the third syllable. They're like, what?
Yeah.
So basically, CF is a genetic disease. So you get the gene from your parents, you're born with it. There's almost 2,000, mutations. You get two copies, one from your mom, one from your dad, obviously. I actually happen to have Delta 508, so I have double Delta 508, both from my parents. This is kind of the most common, but not necessarily like the easiest to treat. You would think since it's the most common, it'd be a little bit easier, but not necessarily.
Do you know if you have family members that also have it?
So we had suspicion that my mom's side, like a great aunt or grandma or I don't remember exactly. On my mom's side, someone that was older, I think my great-grandma's sister maybe had died at a younger age.
Exactly. They have suspicion. The same like history story
because
where you're like,
CF wasn't really, I believe 10 years prior to me being born, it was actually like really found and
it has not been out that long.
Yeah, I believe the year I was born or around that time, the first preventative or not preventative but treatment medication was put out for it.
Oh wow!
Yeah, so it's not really, it wasn't found that long ago.
Exactly.
And so they're continuing to like advance in science and everything, but it really has not really been that long since they've discovered. So we thought maybe on my dad's side someone, but we don't really necessarily know. But it's definitely a lot of the family members are carriers, I'm pretty sure. But so CF affects the lungs. Obviously, it's a lung condition, but it doesn't just affect the lungs. It affects the whole body. It affects like the dietary tract. Our pancreases don't really work well. It like sinuses and just most organs it affects. Like you typically, we basically have an overproduction of thick, sticky mucus in the body. Mm-hmm. And so that kind of is what mainly affects the lungs because we have an overproduction. There's a lot of mucus in there, so we get frequent lung infections. So like to prevent that, we do daily breathing treatments, typically 2 to 4 times a day. And that just kind of consists of doing nebulizers, medications, and then the vest. There's also IPV, which is intrapulmonary. It's like a ventilator, kind of.
Okay.
And it's like a nebulizer, and it like pumps in and out of the lungs. Uh-huh. I do that because I just prefer that.
Yeah.
And it's a little bit of a better treatment. It's not super common, but I just like it.
Is that a steroid?
No. Okay. So it's a big machine. And it has tubes, and it's a big nebulizer tube.
Yeah.
So, like, the little nebulizers that you usually see, it's, like, a bigger one.
Okay.
It looks kind of like a spaceship.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
It's weird. But you put the medication in it, and there's different tubes. So, one is just the, like, it aerolizes the medication. Mm-hmm. And then the other is, like, pump. So, I don't breathe. It's kind of like when someone's on a ventilator.
It breathes for you.
I put it in my mouth, and it, like, pumps in and out.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So, it pumps the medicine in. And I can be a little lazier with that one. So that's probably why I prefer it. But it really gets deep into the lungs.
Okay.
The vest is kind of like, it looks like a life vest. mm-hmm. and it shakes you.
Okay. Yes, I remember grumpy little you having to sit in that thing. And you were just, like, so grumpy and just being, like,
oh, you were just like, ugh. I hate it. I've always hated the vest. It is, it's a pain in the butt.
Yeah.
But then you do the nebulizer with it. Mm-hmm. But I just didn't prefer it. And then I did my IPV in the hospital. And I was like, wait, I love this. So I started to do that.
Yeah. Because it's not really full body. I mean, you were tiny and it was like strapping you in almost to like a straight jacket it would just like shake you.
Yes. So when I was, I want to say I started that when I was 4, because when you're little, you can't do the vest. Uh-huh. So my parents would have to pound on me for 30 minutes, 20, 30 minutes in different areas. I forget what they're called, but they're very special little like cup type things they just pound on you in a certain way. They kind of have like an indent, so it creates that
pressure
specific, like, because when I have like someone pound on my back, you can't just go like with a fist. You kind of have to cup your hand and it makes this certain like force.
Yeah, it's almost like cupping.
Yeah, basically. Okay.
Except pushing instead of sucking.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. So they used to do that for me when I was little until I could start the vest. And I think about 4 years old is when I started doing the vest treatment.
How does it feel when the machine is breathing for you? Do you just kind of relax your body and let it happen?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's it feels pretty natural now because I'm used to it. I do my makeup and stuff.
Nice.
I've always gotten ready while I've done my treatment. My friends are like, what? How are you doing that?
I know.
Yeah.
All the time. But it just kills time when I'm getting ready. But it doesn't feel like anything super weird. I think I had to get used to not breathing with it. Yeah. But it breathes, so it's not, there's no like need to like breathe. It
Once
already
you
does
relax
it for you.
Enough, mm-hmm. you can
it's
feel
a little
fine.
Faster too. It's like 15 minutes.
Okay.
So it doesn't take as long. So that's nice. Kind of the perks of also doing it, but it just gives me a lot better of like airway clearance, which is the purpose. I don't know if I mentioned that, but the purpose of doing these treatments is for airway clearance. Like, we usually have a lot of mucus, so we need to get it out a couple times a day and clear that, because if we don't, it's just going to cause an infection.
It's
just going to build up and stay there, and then it's just like I can get a lung infection without getting sick.
Yeah.
When I was growing up, I used to get a cold and I would know I'm going in the hospital because this is going to be a lung infection, or I'm going to need a antibiotic. At some point, I was not able to do like oral anymore. Yeah, so usually you just have to do the treatments all the time because it's going to like build up and not.
Is it like eosinophils? You know, like the mucus that's created in your lungs from having asthma?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe?
Probably similar.
Okay, yeah.
Similar, but it's a little thicker because people with asthma, I'll explain a little bit. Basically, since we have that overproduction of mucus, what happens is our cells, they have a CFTR protein. Mm-hmm. So in the cell, we have those proteins, and not enough of them are there, one. Mm-hmm. Not enough of them go to the cell surface, 2. And then 3, not enough of them stay open long enough to release salt.
Really?
Oh, okay.
So most people have a protein in their cell. I don't know exactly what it's called. But they have a protein that does all 3 of those things properly. So the salt that's in the cell is able to leave. And like that's a normal process of your cells.
Wow.
So with people with CF, we don't have enough of those. They don't stay open for long enough. So that is why we're salty, like legitimately.
Yeah.
So when, like, I remember when I would sweat
sassy.
During like football games, I would like sparkle. Like
what?
Edward in Twilight. Because seriously, no, you could see salt crystals. If it was like in October and we had football games and it was really, really hot, I like literally salt.
Wow.
Would come off of my body.
Weird.
Yeah. So it's just because of that. And that also kind of ties into how they diagnose CF.
Okay.
So I was diagnosed at 11 months old. Technology is much more advanced, and people that have kids usually will have those tests prior to like what they're carriers of and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
So CF would pop up on that. Mm-hmm. If they were to have had a baby with someone that is also a carrier, that is going to be, I think it's 50% chance that the kid is a carrier, 25% that the kid has CF, I think it's 50% that the kid has CF.
Yeah.
Chance. 25% that they're a carrier. 25% that they're not a carrier.
Okay.
Gotcha.
So if you're a carrier, that doesn't really mean too much, mm-hmm. unless you have a kid with someone else that's a carrier. If you don't, then you can't have a kid with CF.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So if both parents have it, then the kid will have
both
it.
Parents
but
have
if only
to be a carrier.
One parent has it,
then you don't.
Okay. Yeah. The kid can be a carrier but not have it.
You know what? Actually, I don't think they can be a carrier
if
they don't both have it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
I might be wrong on that. I'm not super sure, but I do know that they both have to be carriers, and it's a specific mutation, so that's what I got from both of my parents. But they both have to be carriers to have a kid with CF. So they do those tests when you have a baby now, but back then it wasn't super common.
No.
So I was born, and I had 3 sinus infections before I was 1.
Oh my gosh.
I know I had pneumonia at least once. Mm-hmm. I think those sinus infections, most of them turn into pneumonia, so it was probably more than 1. And I was just basically a failure to thrive baby. Mm-hmm. They didn't really know what was wrong. They couldn't figure it out. I wasn't gaining weight. My diaper smelled really bad.
What do you mean? Okay.
So
details.
So basically, since our pancreas doesn't work, that means that our body's not digesting. It's not spitting out enzymes to digest food. So it was just going right through me. I wasn't gaining weight.
So it was like the food that was coming in was just going right out.
Right out.
And so the smell was just like
horrible. When I went to Children's for the first time and was getting diagnosed and everything, they smelled my diapers and they said she has CF.
Really?
I'm not even kidding.
That's
what they smell. Well, it's a specific smell.
Okay.
Because your body is not digesting the fat. So it's gross.
Okay.
It's gross. TMI, but it's gross. But I take medicine, so no more. No more sticky.
It's fine. Now you don't poop in a diaper. So.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
There's poopery these days, guys.
Oh, yeah. So what they do to actually have a full diagnosis, other than, the diapers, they do a sweat test.
Okay.
So
okay.
We had that. You had one of those?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So they do that to test how much salt is in your sweat.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I don't know what the content, percentage is mm-hmm. for that, but I obviously had a lot, so I had CF.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of what it entitles to be diagnosed. But I knew a girl. She passed probably about 5 years ago. She had CF and I knew her well. She was best friends with my neighbor. So we would see each other a lot. And back then, people with CF could somewhat be near each other because it wasn't as strict. The CF Foundation didn't start to get strict until maybe 10-ish years ago, kind of. So
they don't want two people that have CF to be near?
Yeah, 5 feet apart.
So I haven't. I'm
yeah,
sorry.
You have to watch it. Okay. You have to watch it. So
what?
That's the
that's insane.
The
to
mean
me.
Yeah. So basically, it's 5 feet apart because they want to be closer to each other, but it's technically 6. So we all know right now, 6 feet apart is social distancing. Yeah. So that's kind of where that comes from. But basically, people with CF. Since you have all of this mucus and you obviously have a lower immune system, all that, you're going to start to culture. Your body's going to make, in your lungs, make different, bugs, basically.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I have Pseudomonas, which is one of the most common Pseudomonases.
Mm-hmm.
And they have no idea where I picked it up. I got it when I was 5. I could have been in contact with someone else that had it, another cystic.
Yeah.
I don't know exactly, off the top of my head where Pseudomonas comes from. I know a lot of other ones. There was one that I started to culture, and they're like, you can get it from your shower head. Can get it from going to the lake. Yeah, it's normal things, but people that don't have CF or just normal immune systems, they're not going to get it. I'm sure they've come in contact with many, but it's just not going to culture in their lungs.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I cultured Pseudomonas. There's a couple other things, but it's not I'm actually culturing it. My body doesn't make it, I guess.
Yeah.
It didn't stay in there. So with that, other cystics may not have anything. They could be 20 years old and not culture anything, just have their normal CF.
Yeah.
But some could have multiple. You don't want cross-contamination. That's what they...
So
cross-infection.
You can share...
Somebody else's blood.
You can get it from someone else.
Okay, thank you. Because I haven't seen the movie, so obviously
so that's
I'm
a
out
big
of the loop.
Thing, yeah.
That's, so, that seems so
isolating a little bit. Yes.
Especially when you really, it's great to talk to other people that know what you're experiencing.
Exactly.
I can't even imagine. Then it's like, oh, but you can't.
Yeah. Yeah. So when I was in mid high school, like around that time, when I would go in the hospital, there was four other cystics, and I still am in contact. One did pass away, but I'm still in contact with the other two, or four including me, so three others. I'm still in contact with the other two. But when we were in the hospital, we would all hang out. We would go to the cafeteria together. Mm-hmm. We would do stuff in the hallways together. Like, the nurses would just laugh at us and take videos of us.
Yeah.
And it wasn't as strict. Like, at that time, it was like, eh, you guys shouldn't be really hanging out, but it's kind of fun. But then after that, the foundation really started to crack down in the hospital, and they started to get a little bit more strict with it just because of that. But I know some cystics will still kind of hang out a little bit, but be careful with masks and everything.
Yeah.
Because mm-hmm. if you do it with masks, or if you know, like, say I hang out with a cystic that has Pseudomonas, technically I think it isn't as dangerous as if they had a different one.
Mm-hmm.
Because if they had a different one from me, we definitely could share what we had.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a big thing of why that is how it is.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So it wasn't always like that, but it's just, you know, more research and findings. It's safer because really, like, if you culture something else, you're not just treating your CF, you're treating the what you have and what you culture, mm-hmm. the bug that you have. So, like, when I go in the hospital, they treat Pseudomonas. That's okay. what they treat. So if I were to start to culture something else, they would have to treat both of those at the same time if I had a flare-up, which is harder. It's just going to be harder on my body. It's just all over, like, not ideal.
Yeah.
So that's kind of why. It's just safe to not be with someone else that has CF, but it just kind of depends, situational a little mm-hmm. bit, but definitely not the best.
No.
Yeah.
It seems that's where kind that comes of, like, from. Not fair.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah, and definitely, you're so right, very isolating.
Mm-hmm. It's nice that I have a lot of, like, I connect with a lot of people that have it somewhat over social media and stuff. Like, that's,
yeah.
Social media is so helpful with that, but it's definitely isolating, and there's not that many people that have it. I want to say in the U.S. there's like 50,000
that have cystic fibrosis.
I'm pretty sure. I know it is not over 100,000 in the U.S. I think it's like 30,000 in the U.K. The U.K. is very big with, there's a lot of cystics there.
Yeah. So technically here, it's a rare disease.
Yes. Yes, it is.
Yeah.
It's considered a rare disease, definitely.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that's not a lot of people.
Mm-mm. No, not at all. Not at all. There's definitely not that many. I know a good amount, like, from just social media and stuff, mm-hmm. and all of that, but not too many.
Yeah,
definitely rare and hard to connect. So when I hear that, like, other people, like, know someone with CF, I'm like, oh, how old are they? Like, I want to ask them a million questions.
Yeah.
Just to see and, like, connect and their experience and stuff, because, like, since there are almost 2,000 mutations, I think there's like 1,700 or something, there's a lot of rare ones. There's about 10% of people with CF that have rare
mm-hmm.
nonsense mutations is what they call
nonsense.
It. Nonsense. Wow. Yeah. Because there's usually just one person with it.
Yeah.
But still, I know it's like, two of my close cystic, like, friends, they both have nonsense mutations. And so those are also the harder ones to treat, because that's why right now it's really big with the CF community and the CF Foundation. 90% of people with CF have at least one copy of the Delta 508, I believe.
Okay.
Or it might be that they're being treated. I could be wrong. But I know that 90% have a gene modulator out for them that helps mm-hmm. them. But there's 10% that don't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that aren't able to take those medications yet. But I know that they're still working on it and trying to make it to where that they can.
Yeah.
But it'll take a little bit longer since they have those nonsense mutations.
Yeah. Your friend that passed away, was it due to her cystic fibrosis?
So Michaela was her name. She was diagnosed later. So she was in foster. That was part of the reason why she was a late diagnosis.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I think she was diagnosed at 7 years old, which is very late. But I have heard of other cystics that were diagnosed a few years old, maybe a little bit, like, later in life.
Usually not beyond like 4 or 3.
Yeah, I don't think so, but it also depends on the, like, severity and how mild it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because sometimes it's somewhat like asthma at some point, but it just depends. So she had a lung transplant, but she had rejection. And that's pretty common when you get a transplant with anything. But usually once that rejection starts, there's no going back. And it's just kind of, your body just might not be able to handle it. It just kind of depends. But that is what she passed away from. So technically CF. But once you get a lung transplant, it's a little more than CF.
How did that feel for you? Because you were young. Were you about the same age? Or was she
was a year younger than me.
Okay.
So I think I was 18. So it was a little bit, I think it was honestly harder on my mom. I knew her well. We weren't like always together, obviously, and stuff.
Yeah.
But she, it was definitely sad, of course. And I think it affected me, but it affected my mom a little bit more just because she was one of the other cystics that she watched and then how that I have it. So I think it affected her a little bit more.
Scary as a mom.
Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. Definitely. Yeah, but it definitely was sad.
Yeah,
and affected me. I think it was just a little weird. Not weird, but like seeing someone with,
it's surreal.
Yeah,
you're seeing someone that has what you have.
Yeah,
pass away at such a young age, and you feel, I mean, it probably just puts you in a position where you're like, what does this mean for me?
Yeah,
am I doing things right? Am I in a good position? You know what?
Yeah. I've been at a point, but I definitely have been at a point where I've had to consider lung transplant. I mean, that's always kind of been like, with most cystics, that is like the end. Like, when you are at the end stage of where your lungs are going to be able to handle anymore, then you need to start going through the steps of possibly doing transplant. So I've been at that spot, but thankfully not there anymore and might not have to consider that. Just because of Trikafta, the medication that I've been on. But it kind of just depends. I mean, Trikafta hasn't been around for too long, so we don't know the long-term effects yet, but it's good so far, so hopefully
that's
not
exciting.
Have to. Yeah, super big. So basically growing up, it was definitely a challenge. I mean, my parents were super protective over me, which drove me crazy. Being an only child, being my dad that's Italian and crazy, that was just an extra.
Yeah.
But they were definitely really protective. I always had to be really careful with like what they let me do. Sleepovers were not common for me. That was probably the most like upsetting part about growing up. If I wanted to sleep over at a friend's house, I'm like, no. I'm like, come on, please.
Yeah. Now, does that everything. A lot of that have to do with like one, being put at risk because you're around other people, medication times? Like, you have to get up and take medication, or you do it before bed?
Yeah, probably. I mean, with taking all of my stuff over, it was a hassle.
Yeah.
My vest weighed, like, 1,000 pounds. Yeah. So, I mean, it was on wheels, but I think just, I don't know, they were just so overprotective, I feel like. So that was definitely something that caused more stuff later on in life. Because I just felt so, like, constricted, not fully from my disease, but definitely because my parents were like, nope, can't do this, nope, can't do that. And I mean, it was not really their fault. Like, they were just trying to
protect
me. They wanted to keep me in a bubble at some point, which sometimes I needed that.
Yeah.
But it just kind of,
I think with a lot of childhood chronic illnesses, it's extremely difficult and isolating.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Even like with making friends, it's like people don't always understand and they're kind of like, well, why? What's wrong?
Yeah. Or didn't understand fully, especially when you're young. They're like, oh, okay. They don't really like know fully.
But yeah.
Like, oh, okay. I mean, I'm lucky that I had such good friends. Like, definitely felt different when I was younger. I always had a cough. Always having to take medications. Definitely, like, embarrassing, like, to always have a cough. Because people would be like, are you sick? And I'm like, no, stop.
No. Well, I mean, yes, but
yes,
no.
But no. Like, it kind of, like, it depends what you mean.
Mm-hmm.
My friends were always definitely pretty supportive. Like, I think they understood, at least to an extent, when we were younger. And they were always like, are you okay? Like, I mean, they would always, like, be there. Mm-hmm. You know, especially as I got older. Like, my friends definitely know, like, I'm also will say when I need something or if I'm like having a hard time with something, they are definitely always there, so I'm super thankful for that. But it was obviously hard for like acquaintances or people that I wasn't always close with,
like, or normalcy, like not having sleepovers as a little kid is hard because a lot of kids are having sleepovers.
And even when, like, but when I was young and now, like, I've always just been been very open about my CF. Like, I think that was just, like, part of me as a person mm-hmm. and, like, who I am, but also just kind of, like, the importance of just kind of spreading awareness and, you know, like, being transparent and vulnerable and, like, just, like, letting people know that this is who I am. Like, yeah, I do have CF and I'm not, like, that doesn't define me, but it is, like, who, like, it made me who I am. Like, I'm going to not just push it aside and say, like, kind of hide it. Mm-hmm. I never really tried to hide mm-hmm. it. And I know a lot of people do that. And I fully understand because I think because of who I am as a person, I didn't mind hiding it because I was like, yeah, whatever. Like, it's there. It's not going away. Yeah. So I kind of just accepted that at a really young age, I feel like. And that's not as common because I think that's hard.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's really hard with people mm-hmm. with illnesses that have something. It's really hard to accept, like, just really accept it because it's yeah. hard. It's not,
it's like that fine line of this doesn't define me, but it is a part of my makeup.
Exactly,
it is a part
yeah.
of me
yeah.
without it being all of what I'm about.
Oh yeah, no. And I know it's important, like, a lot of people do say, you know, my illness doesn't define me, and I think that is important. Like, I'm not my CF, I'm not that, but it is who it made, like, it is who I am in the sense of, like, how I handle things and what, how I look at life.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so I definitely. Think that's, it's important to acknowledge that it's there because mm-hmm. yeah. It's not going away, but it's hanging out for a while.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
But I also just, like, I'm thankful for my CF because I've had to be so tough throughout life. I didn't really have the choice to be weak. Like, I did not, that wasn't an option. Like, I've always been tough on myself with cheer and gymnastics and everything else. So that kind of where that comes from. But I just was not going to, like, let my CF make me weak. I was always going to just kind of continue to fight and do what I needed to do. Mm-hmm. Because, like, if I wasn't as tough as I was, like, growing up and still, my CF would have won, like, a long time ago. Like, I wouldn't be as healthy or where I am today if I let myself be weak.
Yeah.
And I think it's okay sometimes too. Yeah, if it's needed. But I think I just didn't let myself do that. And so it helped grow me as a person
mm-hmm.
and kind of go through that. But as I got older and managing my disease, when I was getting into adulthood, that was pretty hard because I was becoming an adult and I was like, what the heck is going on? Not knowing life and everything like that.
Exactly.
And so I started to kind of get a little bit rebellious. And that's where I think when my parents were so strict with me throughout my life, it was good. But then it also made me a little bit rebellious when I was older, I think. But also having a time where I'm trying to become adult and my CF is really getting in the way. Mm-hmm. I think it got in the way when I was an adult more than when I was little. Because now I am, like, trying to figure out who I am. I'm, like, meeting new people and kind of a little bit embarrassed more, I guess, mm-hmm. because of getting sick all the time or whatever it was. So I got a little bit rebellious, and I think I had a little bit of, like, a why me stage almost.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And I tried not to. Most of the time, I did not have that, like, why me thing. But I think that was the, like, the foundation of where it came from. And so I wasn't as compliant with medications. I wasn't fully skipping medications, but there was a time where I was not as compliant. And I think it just really put everything into perspective because I got pretty sick. There I was in the hospital for almost, like, 3 weeks. I had to quit my job. And that was a point in time where my doctor sat me down and was like, we might need to start looking at transplant.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And after that, I just honestly got my crap together because...
Was that when you were nannying?
After that.
Oh, okay.
A little bit after yeah. that. Not too long after that. It was in 2017. Around then. I was, like, 2021.
Yeah.
And just was not doing the best.
Well, I think Claire can relate to that. Like, it's yeah. like balancing trying to keep up with everybody.
Yes.
And, like, enjoying
yes.
things yeah, and having
definitely
fun.
Definitely going through phases of, like, I just want to be a normal 22-year-old.
Yeah.
And I want to yeah. go out with my friends and have all the fun that everybody else yeah. can have. And so I'm just going to be lazy and not take care of myself.
Yeah.
And then you get really sick.
And it catches up to you.
Yeah.
Definitely caught up to me.
And then you have a flare up. And
yeah. And it sucks. It sucks when you're in that 18 stage, 18 to, like, 21, 22. You just want to, like, be like your friends. And then your disease is like, excuse me, What are you doing?
Yeah.
I think it's kind of like, it sucked because every time my CF would want to act up, it was like, no, I'm the boss. It would come at times.
You were like fighting your CF.
Yeah, it's like, excuse you.
it's like a thumb war with yourself. Yes. No one's going to win.
100%, yeah. It didn't wait. Came when I was on break or I was like, I think I'm good to go in the hospital. I can take off some time from work, whatever. No, it came at Easter. I missed a lot of Easters. I missed Thanksgiving, friends' birthdays. I was almost in for my birthday. It did not care. Yeah. It was like, I don't care. I'm showing up now. You have an infection. You need to go in the hospital. It never was. And that was kind of the really annoying part. It was in control at those times, but I had to let it. Mm-hmm. I had to stop. I think that was the most like upsetting because I hold myself to a really, really high like standard. Mm-hmm. I was always just feeling very responsible for things like with work and everything else, like commitments. And so when my CF was like, nope, you need to give me attention now, that was the most upsetting part, that I had to stop everything that was going to be happening the next 2 weeks and going to the hospital. Mm-hmm. It was like that day or the next day. Mm-hmm. It was never like, okay, then let's just plan one. No.
Yeah.
It was now.
You can't book a reservation.
Yeah. Nothing like that. So it was always there when it wanted to be. It was on its own terms.
Yeah.
So I think that was one of the hardest parts. But I just really am thankful kind of that I had that slap in the face of
may need a transplant. And how many transplants is it just a one-time thing?
Some people do get multiple, but that is like super situational. I don't know too much about that, but I do know that people have gotten 2 to 3 transplants. I know of a couple, but it's still, you're also opening up your entire body again. They break
every
your
time.
Rib cage.
Oh, geez.
Yeah, no, I know. That's it's painful. Really, it's scary. You still open yourself back up and then you risk everything.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I don't even know the exact percentage. I know it's kind of low of like the survival from, not survival, but
survival
like
rate
being,
statistics.
Yes, of getting like a lung transplant. So I know it's not very high just because of all the factors that go into it. So that's kind of like when my doctor was like, we're going to start doing the evaluating for it, I was like, oh, crap.
Yeah.
So if there is a successful lung transplant, does your CF take over those new lungs too?
Eventually, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So not right away. You do have great lungs, but you...
Your Siri was listening to you.
Oh, like, she keeps going off and I'm like, trying
to her.
Yeah, Siri, we are not talking to you. There is a lot of successful transplants. There's a girl that comes, she's older, a lady, comes to the walks and she had transplant, I'm pretty sure. There's a couple that I've seen and they do really great with it. It just kind of depends fully on your body, what your body wants to do. But you do definitely still have CF and you still take some of your CF medications, but you also have a handful of rejection medications that you have to take and certain things that you need to do because you are now... Is it immunosuppressant? I know you have to take immunosuppressant.
Immunocompromised.
Compromised. There we go. Thank you. That is also another disease in itself. Yeah. Not necessarily, but a whole nother thing in itself. I know that. So that's kind of also like hard to accept too when you are going into transplant because your life is about to literally flip upside down.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's kind of like the harder part too. And so I really was like, I don't know if I would want to get a transplant. I mean... At that point, it's a lot of things to go into it and consider. But right now, I'm just kind of thankful because I probably won't have to consider that, at least for a long time, if even. So basically, when I had that point in time where I was a little rebellious, got sick and everything, my lung function went down to 29%. I got it bumped up after those couple weeks in the hospital, and it was 40% when I left. And which is my like normal range, sort of.
Mm-hmm.
I should have mentioned CF is a progressive disease. As you get older, you continue to get more lung infections, which causes more scarring, which kind of puts your lung function down and down and down over time.
Mm-hmm.
So that is why it's important to just prevent those lung infections and all that. So,
do you know what your lung function was when you first got diagnosed?
Oh, no idea. It was, you know, when you're first diagnosed and you're, so I was 11 months, mm-hmm. they couldn't do a PFT, is what it's called, okay. the pulmonary lung function test. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a hard test, to be honest. It's pretty hard. They watch me and they're like, I feel like they're watching like a race or something, like yeah. the RTs. So I don't know exactly when I did my first one. I had to have been at least no younger than 5. I could have been 10, honestly, okay. because it's hard. You breathe normal, and then you do a certain, like, last breath, and then you, like, have to blow out, but it's a certain way, and you have to make sure that your throat is very open mm-hmm. for them to get a really accurate reading.
Gotcha.
And there's, like, 10 numbers that are on it of what it tests, but the main one is the FEV1, which is the amount of the volume of air that is pushed out per second.
Gotcha.
Which is the percentage that we mainly look at, and what it was 29%, and then I got it to 40.
Mm-hmm.
So 40 was what I needed to be accepted into the clinical trial for Trikafta. My doctor, I've had my doctor since I was 11 months old. He diagnosed me. So oh, that wow. is still why I'm at the Children's Hospital,
yeah.
Where I am at. And so he's a big part of my journey. Like, I love him so much. He's,
and they're not making you leave.
Not yet.
That's
I have
awesome.
To. I'm going to be kicked out soon.
Yeah.
But
Claire just got kicked out of her pediatrician.
Oh, yeah. So he let me stay, but I'm also in the clinical trial still. So that was another back way of
yeah.
why I could stay. So I'm there till about 26.
Oh,
so I have like
nice.
A year and a half. Yeah.
yeah. So you're on the Trifecta clinical trial.
Yes. Okay. So I started that in October 2018. So when I had my point in time where I got sick, that was like November 2018. No, like the end of the year, like January, I think, 2017. Sorry. No, 18. Yeah. Like the end of the 17.
yeah.
Or the 18. So I got it up, and then the trial didn't end up starting until I think I was in phase 2 or 3. I forget exactly, but it didn't end up starting until I think they started to test or whatever it was, like to evaluation. It was fall, so it was about August 2018, September. And then my lung function was 42 at that point, so that was good. It had
oh,
to be
good.
40 to
okay.
be accepted. And so I got into that, and that was only 8 weeks. It was pretty short, but I had medication because I had a reaction to it, but it was fine. It wasn't that bad. That was kind of my
okay.
normal,
what
too.
What are your reactions
it was,
like?
It was from the birth control that I was taking, so I had to switch mm. to a different one,
okay.
which is what they saw. But the reaction, this one was pretty bad. I've had another bad one, but that one was way worse because they didn't know what that one really was.
Okay.
but this one, they called it lesions, but they
what?
Were like, it wasn't hives, but it looked like hives. It wasn't an allergic reaction. It was a med reaction.
Oh,
so,
med combo reaction.
Yes, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
No.
So this one was just hive-like things all over my body, like for like 2 weeks almost.
Oh, no. Were
it
they
was
itchy?
It was,
or?
It was fine, but I was coaching at that time, and I had to go to the ER because that's just what my doctor was like, go to the ER.
Yeah.
And then he was like, tell the ER doctor to do this, this, and this. And I was like, okay, so you want me to tell the doctor
what
to
do? But can you not
okay.
just, like, meet
yeah.
me down
so,
here?
Can you call
yeah,
or
so
something?
I was coaching, and we went to Valleys. So I had to go to the ER and then go straight to the Valley game.
What?
I was fine. It was cold, so no one can see my my hives.
Yeah.
But yeah, that part was interesting. So I've been on it. I knew I had med, so I technically started it in, like, October 2018. The first part
is it like an oral medication?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. So the med itself, so how I explain that, we have our cells, we have the CFTR protein. So one, there's three, it was called the triple combo.
Trifecta.
Triple combo.
Okay.
And then Trikafta.
Trikafta. Oh, okay. Sorry.
Trifecta
yeah.
is the Dutch booze drink, actually. And I would get them confused sometimes because
okay.
I always order
yeah.
that.
Girl, so, I'll have the Trikafta.
Yes.
And they're like, sorry, that's not a thing.
So they didn't have a name for it, obviously, before it was FDA approved.
Mm-hmm.
So they would call it the triple combo because there were three medications in it.
Oh.
One created more CFTR proteins. One brought more to the surface of the cell, and one kept it open for longer. So this medication is now allowing more salt to leave my cell, which creates less mucus and less, the mucus is not as thick. So I do have a little bit of mucus. Everybody has mucus a little bit. So it's not as thick and I don't have nearly as much. I barely cough anymore. I have way more energy. I have been out of the hospital. So throughout my life, when I was in middle school, it started, I would go in the hospital at least twice a year. High school was 2 to 3 times a year. And then I would say probably by 18, I could not make it more than 3 to 4 months out of the hospital. My lungs didn't last much longer. And I started to become resistant to oral medications. And so if I got a cold, I was getting an infection, I was going in the hospital. Mm-hmm. There was no way around it. I could not do anything at home. Had to be IV antibiotics. So I was going in every 3 to 4 months. I have not been in the hospital since November 2019 for a tune-up.
That's awesome.
I'm almost to 2 years. I haven't gone this long since I was before middle school, which is insane. I cannot believe what my life is, honestly. So this medication has just been really good for me, and it's really good for a lot of other cystics too that take it. But that's kind of what
the trial is done well, and yes, so now people can take it.
Or yes.
Is it
still... Okay. So when I did the clinical trial, and then they had me do open label if I wanted to, and of course they pay you for it, and you just give your information,
make some money, and you feel better,
yeah, and you get it for free. So I was I might as well. I don't mind doing it, kind of giving back a little bit because I allow them to use my information, and they're still technically testing. But they take my data, and it's just for longer research. So I'm that's fine. I don't mind doing it. So
you're making you're making things better for future.
Yes, definitely.
Young people.
Yeah,
and people your own age, actually.
Oh no, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
And so they submitted it for approval. There were 2 triple combos in study, and I was praying to God that they would submit mine. Because I was so scared that if they didn't submit mine, I had a little bit of a reaction, but it was just that birth control medication. So I was good after that. So this one I knew I was not allergic to. The other one I was really scared I was going to be allergic to because I've been allergic to the other gene modulators that they put out.
Okay.
I had a severe reaction to that. That one was bad. So I was really terrified. They ended up submitting the one that I was on. They submitted it in July 2019 for early approval of 8 months. It was all over the news because the FDA approved it 3 months after it was submitted. Wow. That's unheard of.
Super fast.
Unheard of, yeah. So it was approved October 2019, which happened to be a year later after I had
started
the med. Okay. Yeah. So that was very emotional. I sent messages to other CFers. I was crying. It was definitely, it was amazing. And actually, speaking of... A day or two ago, the FDA had just approved it for 6 to 11-year-olds because it was only 12 and up.
Okay.
Yeah, so they just approved it for younger. That's super exciting just because now they're younger, they're going to stop more scarring in their lungs. They're not going to, I haven't really had a lung infection. I haven't been that sick.
Yeah.
In a
crazy year.
Yeah. And so it's just been really amazing. Honestly, I just can't believe what my life is like now. I never thought it would be like this. I thought it was just gonna, before Trikafta, I didn't necessarily, I had goals, but I didn't have realistic goals. I was maybe I will finish college. And my doctor and my so we have a lot of specialists. So my social worker, she literally told me, I know you want to be a teacher, but is that realistic? Because, she wasn't being negative. She's very positive and super nice. But,
I don't know. I'm making a face point, I'm shocked right now. Who says that to someone?
No, it was honestly, it was real, though.
It because was kind I, of like, get your shit together or else.
Because it was, it wasn't when I was super unhealthy, but it was at the point where it was you might not be healthy enough to become a teacher and, you're going into the hospital 3 or 4 option? Times a year. Is that, and it wasn't, honestly. It kind of was, kind of wasn't. It's just, I think they wanted me to consider other things because a lot of cystics that are older and weren't as healthy as I was couldn't really consider doing, real, jobs like that.
Yeah.
It just wasn't realistic. And mm-hmm. and so it
which
was
is,
kind of...
Which is very normal when you have any chronic illness. It's really yeah. hard to do a lot of jobs.
Yeah,
especially exactly. because your immune system is not as healthy or strong or, you know, going to be, like, quick reactive mm-hmm. as other people's. So...
Yeah. Once I started to become healthier, but even then, like, I was like, I don't think I would want to maybe get married even because it's like, obviously there's no set time for everybody, like, as far as like when you, like, how long you're going to live. But I think it was obviously a little bit more with me because it was not, I had more of a not guarantee, I guess.
Yeah.
Because of being sick so often and it was very unpredictable. So I didn't even know if I was going to finish college.
Emotionally, that has to be really hard to handle.
Yeah, I think I am not.
Do you feel like you had to grow up really fast?
Probably.
Really young?
I think I had an acceptance. I think it was partly like from my religion and being Christian Catholic. And so I think I accepted at a really young age that that was what my life was going to be. And I was just going to have to deal with it in whatever way I had. I think it definitely was like leaning on God a lot because I think I just had like deep within me an understanding that like my life wasn't going to be fully my life because of the CF, but like it was just going to be what it was going to be. And I think I just had that acceptance at a like really young age and I was okay with whatever was going to happen.
Okay.
So I think I was just very lucky with that because it upset me that I wasn't able to really have like long-term goals, but I just would always tell myself, you know, oh, I could do this, but like, what if my CF does this kind yeah. of thing? And the last couple years, I haven't really had to think about that. Like I haven't, I'm going to do this because I'm going to do this. Like I don't have to say, well, what if my CF, like it's not, I'm actually like applying for a,
Jane Gardeners.
I work as a tutor at after school program and I have for like 6 years and I've been wanting to move up and I've been ready to move up for so long. And I'm actually applying for a site lead position soon, crossing
awesome.
Fingers, which is like the principal of an after school program.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I don't have to think, well, what if my CF allows me?
And you're going to school to be a teacher.
Yes, I am a math major and I'm getting my credential. And I went to my 4 year that I'm at right now after I started TriCAFTA because I was like, I can do this. Like,
yeah.
I'm healthy enough for this. I'm going to get a degree. Like, yeah. I think
so freeing.
It... Yeah, yeah. So it really just... It helped me with that a lot. It's been great the
and
last couple years.
And so more people are going on it and learning about it.
Yes,
and it's
yeah.
working and working and working.
Oh, yeah. Like, I
That's
just want...
Awesome.
I hope that they get that last 10% because there's still that 10% of CFers that cannot take a gene modulator mm-hmm. medication.
Okay.
There's 4 or 5 of them out. So they're still trying to trying to get one out for them. And I think we're close. I really think we're close. Vertex, the company that has made all of the gene modulators, like works really, really hard for the CF community. And they're kind of a part of the CF Foundation in a way, like connected to it. So I know that it's going to be soon. I know that it's going to be really soon and hopefully like help that 10%.
Yeah.
But I think awareness too is like really important to help that 10%.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's really amazing that with such a rare disease, there is research happening
yeah.
and good medication because
oh, yeah.
oftentimes a rare disease is just kind of like pushed to the side.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
clearly
yeah.
there's enough people that this matters enough to
exactly.
And
people
such a
have raised
community.
Money.
Yeah. I think advocacy is just so important with all different diseases. It's,
yeah.
It's really important for spreading awareness and just making it known. And then other people are like, wait, this needs more attention.
Yeah.
And so I think that's super important just to get it out there and have people become more aware of it with
mm-hmm.
rare diseases because they need a lot of attention too, just
yeah.
as much as like cancer gets attention or like other like more common
exactly.
Diseases or anything like that, I think.
Yeah, yeah. I think it is hard and I don't know how you feel, but it's like can be confusing when you look great and you look super healthy
yeah.
and you're also so active when you can be.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
then you have this really difficult disease that can just knock you out. And so it's really difficult for people to take it seriously when it's not, external, it's internal.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think people that are closer to me know how serious it is, but people that don't know me super well don't. And so I think the awareness of the ugly side is really important, because that's why, I think that's why I've always been so open and just explain it to people, because I don't mind if people know about it. I want people to know about it.
Right.
Even though it's like a very like vulnerable part of me, I guess. Mm-hmm. I think it's just really important, super important for people to know about it and know the ugly side, because it's not shown, just like you said.
Yeah.
But it's really important, I think.
So you mentioned briefly your hearing loss.
Okay, so basically, when I was going to the hospital frequently and being treated with the IV medications. So for my Pseudomonas is what they would treat. But when I was being treated with one of the medications, it had a side effect of hearing loss. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, they all have side effects. It was gradual in high school. I guess my mom noticed it and I was like, I don't know, whatever.
Things she would talk to you, but you wouldn't hear her?
Yeah.
Okay.
And so my senior year, I was failing my hearing test at school. So they're like, okay.
Hearing test at school. Yeah, no,
like it was those simple ones that, like, you know, when you go to PE and you got to do that one.
Oh,
and
yeah.
You do those couple. Yeah. So it's like the beeps. And so I was not doing well. And so I already was getting treated for my sinuses, like an ear, nose, and throat place. So they were like, okay, like, you probably should get a hearing test. So I went there, got a hearing test, definitely had a lot of hearing loss. I think at that point it was significant to where I needed hearing aids. And so, but
both ears, just one's worse than the other.
Well, so kind of, it was both ears at that point, but it was like not even, which was also kind of weird. So we didn't know what it was from. So I went into the hospital. It was like January.
You didn't know that this was a side effect
of it yet. We know it was a side effect, but we didn't it wasn't the connection.
When you look at the side effects of like aspirin and it's like kidney failure.
Yeah, exactly. So it wasn't like, oh, wait, it's from this medication. We didn't know that at that point. So I think it was January 2016. I went to the hospital and I was treated with that medication. And I remember when the nurses would come in the morning, my ears would ring. And I couldn't hear usually at first, which is now my normal, but I didn't really know what it was from.
So like tinnitus kind of a sound.
Yes, yeah. So I do have that a little bit, but it's on and off.
Same girl.
Yeah.
We do too.
Sometimes this like fluttering kind of thing.
Oh.
And it's obnoxious.
Mine's always ringing.
Always or just does it come and go?
No, kind it's of like always come and go.
Okay, yeah. It's weird. It's like with the ringing.
It is. Yeah.
I remember distinctly, I was home after the hospital and was laying on the couch and I had an alarm set for like my nap I was waking up from, whatever. And I was laying on my left side and I could faintly hear the alarm, and I pick up my head and then I could hear it. And I was like, whoa, wait a minute. I'm like plugging my ear and I'm like, I can't
hear
it.
Trying to listen with one side.
Yeah. I'm like, what's going on? Or like to put earbud in. Yeah. I was like, I can't really hear that. What is going on? Oh my God. And I was like, Mom, I'm deaf in this ear. Like, what the heck?
So it happened fast.
It was fast. And I had already got my, like, hearing test for the hearing aids. I already got, like, I think I got, like, measured or whatever.
Fitted for them.
And I had to go back and I was like, I think I have more hearing loss. Like, I was in the hospital. And I think at this point we figured out what it was.
Okay.
Because it made the connection. It happened right after the hospital and all of that. I got retested and he was like, whoa, like, this is a insane drop. I cannot believe this is from a medication. Like, I think it got worse after that, but it wasn't much. But I didn't do the medication after that. So it was kind of weird.
Yeah.
It didn't drop that, like, significantly after that. But we think it was just kind of like a gradual, like, it was still going to lose some hearing. So I had hearing aids maybe for a year, and then I stopped wearing them because they were just, my hearing got so bad. I have 0% word recognition in this ear, and I have 8% in this year. My hearing in total, I have like 15% in this year, or no, 30%. So 50% total, kind of.
Okay.
Like,
yeah.
So I don't have much hearing. I lost about 85% of my hearing. So I had hearing aids. One was a hearing aid. One, you can't put a hearing aid in a deaf ear because there's nothing to amplify. Okay. So this one was like a, take stuff from this side, sends it to the other one.
Really?
Okay. Yeah, it was kind of cool. But until Spaghetti chewed up my hearing aid one
time. Is that your dog?
Yeah, Spaghetti was one of the dachshunds.
And they're not cheap. Yes. Hearing aids are not cheap.
No, they're not cheap. And she dissembled completely.
Oh my gosh.
You know, like, dogs love to chew things that smell like you. I had them in my laptop sleeve. I ran to the store really quick, came back completely in like 10 pieces.
Oh no.
My mom wanted to kill me. Thankfully, it wasn't the main hearing aid. It was the other one.
Okay.
I was in a lot of trouble.
Yeah.
But the dog
wasn't.
Yeah. Okay. No, Spaghetti was... No, she wasn't in trouble. Oh, my goodness. But I stopped wearing them after a certain amount of time because they were just more harmful than helping because I had so much hearing loss. I was like, I still don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
So it was just annoying. They would pick up a lot of different things.
Yeah.
I hated them. So since it was so low, I was evaluated for a cochlear implant, which has literally been the most amazing thing ever. That took a long time. So I went to Stanford
to get approved?
Huh?
Did it take a long time to get approved or just
well,
put it in?
Well, it's a long process. You go and you go to do a hearing test and meet the surgeon. Then you go back and you talk about, like, actually doing the surgery. Mm-hmm. Then I had to have, like, ear CT. I had to have a balance test. And then I had to get a bunch of, like, shots and everything. Then I finally had it scheduled for April 2020 and freaking COVID.
No.
Pushed it back. I cried for a while. I was so upset, but it was fine. COVID pushed it back, and then I got it July 31st of that year, 2020.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
They don't activate it right away.
What?
So you're very swollen.
Oh, okay.
And I actually had the great side effect of the surgery of numbness. So that
what?
Was nice. Oh. I was numb for over a month.
Just on
in that
like
area.
Your head?
Yeah,
or...
like all right here and then okay. like my tongue a little bit and like
ooh.
Not that long though.
Okay.
It started to wear off and it was only back here. So that was nice. I wasn't in that much pain.
Yeah.
I was. But like someone ripped my ear off and then sewed it back on, which is
you wouldn't really
what they
do
did.
It.
It was, it hurt, but it wasn't as much.
So it's just all those nerve endings, and then it just so happened to connect all the way down your
well,
jaw and
yeah,
your
they
tongue.
Well, yeah, they all like, kind of connect right here, but it wasn't too bad. It was only, like, right here, like, around my ear, probably, like, a 3 inches, like, of a radius.
Kind of like Phantom of the Opera.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So they activated it about 3 weeks later. And it was very unpleasant at first because it was a high-pitched robot. That's what it sounded like.
What?
They prepared me. They said, you may hate this. You may hate this. Like, not everybody has the same experience. It's, like, going to be way different from someone that was, like, born deaf, gets it when they're young, or someone that is old. They thought I was going to do really well with it, which I did. But at first, it was, like, my brain was, like, what is this?
Okay, so explain what that's like.
It was literally like a high-pitched robot, and it
Do
was
I
not
sound
words.
Like that?
Not anymore.
Okay.
Not at all. After about a week, it was decently normal, and I went back for like a 1 week post-activation, then like a 2 week, and like a month. I went a lot of times like after that, because then each time we would... So what it is in the computer, they program it. There's 23 channels, and they change each one. She says, I have a paper. She says, too loud, too soft, blah, blah, blah. And she puts it up or down, whatever I need. And they're like the tones and
pitches.
It's
your mixer board.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sort of.
Yes. Basically. They do that each time. And it's, I could tolerate more and more. So after the first week, she was like, wow, you're doing really good. And then the second week, she was like, this is crazy. She would stand on the other side of the room. She would cover her mouth and she would say words and I would repeat them. And, like, prior to that, she would have said
test.
Cow and I would have said dog. Like, it was, like, not... And I was saying all the right things. She was like, oh, my God, this is amazing. Like, you're doing really well. And my first, I think it was a month post-op, we did a hearing test with it. And my word recognition was, like, 88%.
Wow.
And prior to that, it was, like, 15%. Like, low. 8%. That's what it was. 8%.
That's awesome.
And it was 88%. I was like... none of you better be talking about me anymore because
I can hear everything.
I can hear you loud and clear, yeah. Loud and clear. But no, it was really great. And my audiologist, like, she was just, this is amazing. Like, you're doing so well with it. So I was really lucky to have had such a good experience with it. It's really tiring. Like, I get hearing fatigue, I've noticed. Sometimes I'm just really tired at the end of the day. And I'm like, why am I so grumpy and tired? And I'm like, wait, my brain is still kind of adapting to this literal, like, device in my head. I have to work a lot harder to be able to hear and converse with people. So I have to remember that. At first, it was definitely, I was like, whoa, I need to not, like, I need to take this off for the day.
Like, input overload.
Yeah, yeah. So it's basically, I'll show you guys too. I have, there's two processors. Mm-hmm. The processor is, like, the hearing aid part. But it's magnetic of what in here.
What?
Yeah. So it just sticks on. So it's on now. But when I take it off, it's not, like, on. But yeah, it's really cool. So this one's nice because it's just a little.
It matches your hair color.
Yes. And yeah. You get to choose which one, that's which nice. Color you want. Yeah.
I've seen this little girl on TikTok that has a cochlear. And her dad always gets mad at her because she'll take it off and stick it on the refrigerator when she doesn't want to talk.
Oh my God, that's the funniest thing ever.
She doesn't want to talk to them, so she puts it on the refrigerator and, like, goes and hides.
I can honestly, when I don't want to hear someone, I control it on my phone and I just turn the microphone all the way off.
You're like, I'm done, like,
nope,
listening.
Nope, still have it on. Think I have it on, but microphone is off, so I cannot hear.
That's hilarious. So funny. I love that.
So yeah, no, I'll do that sometimes, but that's super funny. I love that that little girl just knows how to do that. Yeah. She's like, nope,
she's not like, right now. I'm done.
Not right now.
I love that.
I definitely feel that.
Okay, so where would you recommend, well, where do you find, like, really great support, whether it's communities or websites? If you have a question, you're like, okay, this is, like, a new thing, or
yeah, okay,
where do you find stuff?
First, my CF friends. I have a good CF friend. His name's Trey. So we're really close and we talk a lot. And he's like a biology person. He's extremely smart. So I usually go to him. And
<Okay.
laughs> most cystics do this, where you just go to other cystics and you're like, okay, this is happening. What's going on? Have you had this?
Yeah.
Usually they're going to say, yes, I've had this. Or we just figure it out together.
Yeah.
And think we're doctors because
we
do.
We do that with each other.
Exactly.
Did you find these friends online?
Yes, yeah. Instagram mainly. Because, like, you follow some other people with CF, and then you see, like, them tagging others, and you're like, oh, wait.
I'm gonna follow them.
Us, yeah. Mm-hmm. Most of us, like, then we'll see the mutual followers, and we're like, oh, they have CF. Like,
yeah.
you don't. You just know. So then you'll kind of connect that way. That was mostly how I started to connect with others. So I don't really use that.
Well, you're young, too. Claire says Facebook
is
for old people.
Facebook.
Yeah, I don't even, like, really.
I use Facebook, but I'm an old people, so.
Google is never really helpful, because Google's like, go to your doctor. And I'm like, no.
Yeah.
Not for this, no. Yeah. Not all the time. But my doctor is super supportive, and I'll call them if I need something. But mainly just other people that have CF, and it's just really more, like, the best support.
Yeah.
And the best way to just, like, get help, or even, like, if I, like, just having anxiety about something and need to talk to someone about something,
mm-hmm.
they're always really there to just, like, vent to and stuff. So that's good.
Really great. I mean, you brushed up a little bit on your friends and how they've been, like, super supportive, but what would your advice be? What would your advice be actually that have been, like, Claire, for example, and you have had an illness your whole life?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What, I think, would your advice be, one, to parents that have a young person with a chronic illness that's lifelong, and to friends that are supporting someone with your illness or any illness?
To parents, I think not putting them in a bubble so much is probably, like, I know that's the first instinct, and, like, taking care of them or getting their medications for them, or I think that really hinders, because my parents were getting my medications for me and my refills and bringing my medications to me or harping me about doing this medication, that medication. It was hard for them to let go and let me take the responsibility. So I think starting doing that at a young age is what I would tell parents to do, but obviously not all at once. Because you then kind of risk the fact of, like, the kid forgetting,
misses.
Because you're probably going to forget and maybe getting sick or whatever the consequence would be. But I think doing it at a young age and putting more of that responsibility on them at a young age and kind of accepting the fact that they're growing up, because my mom had a really hard time accepting that I was growing up.
Just preparing
and that
you to
she
be
wasn't
independent.
Gonna be,
just preparing you to be independent.
Exactly, yeah. And just being responsible and gonna make mistakes and forget some medication, mm-hmm. but then you need to kind of face those consequences. I think that I'm the person that's like, I need to learn myself with mm-hmm. something. And so if something happens and I get a consequence from it, that's how I learn.
Yeah.
Because, like, I mean, I'm sure a lot
that's
of people
how
are
we,
like that.
A lot
yeah,
of, you
exactly.
know, you can tell me and, like, shoulda, woulda, coulda, or I wish I knew. Yeah. But, like, I wouldn't know unless I did it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I think needing to deal with the, like, making mistakes with that.
When they're young
allowing
at home.
Them to, yeah. Mm-hmm. Not fully keeping them in a bubble, but, like, keeping them in a bubble at times when it's, like, extremely necessary, not as much, and, like, taking off. Like, stepping back a little bit, mm-hmm. because I think that is what kind of can cause, you know, the rebellion or just, like, not as strong as relationships, because then mm-hmm. the kid is going to get really annoyed, and
resentful,
it's just going to be a cycle.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think definitely that would be good advice for parents, just to kind of help with that and give the responsibility to the kid.
And mm-hmm. friends?
I would say friends. Just try to be as supportive as you can and check in on the person with the illness, I think, but also don't overdo it and look at them like, oh, she has a disease, like, she can't, or like, are you sure you can do this, like, nothing like that. I think at times if you see a like if you visually see a struggle, then that's the time where you should check in and see. It's they're not going to fully understand the disease because it's not happening to them,
yeah, mm-hmm.
but I think accepting that mm-hmm. and knowing, like, I'm not going to really know everything about your disease, but that's okay, and I'm going to try to, yeah. like, you know, just be understanding. So I think definitely that, too.
Good. Yeah. I love that. Any other shout-outs?
Not at this time. I think just my friend.
You're not blowing up the TikTok or anything right now? You're not blowing
no,
up?
No, I have one that blew up. So
what was
we'll
it?
We'll see. It was a one with my friends. I'll show you guys after.
Okay.
it's a little, it's an interesting one.
Okay.
But, yeah.
All right, so three random questions.
Okay.
I'm going to let Claire take over.
Okay. What's your biggest pet peeve?
Someone's chewing, like, if it's too loud.
Especially
my
gum.
My mom does that, and
especially
I just stare
gum.
At her, and I'm like, is that necessary? Yeah. Is that necessary? She's like, this is how I chew. And I'm like, that's not normal.
that's so funny. Hot dogs or hamburgers?
Ooh. It depends. If it's from Costco, a hot dog.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Hello.
If it's In-N-Out, though, mm-hmm. I think, like, I mean, In-N-Out, the workers probably know me at the In-N-Out by my house.
Your name,
so
like,
hello. It depends, but I think.
Okay, so you're at a barbecue.
Okay, definitely a hot dog.
Okay.
But only
okay.
if they're from Costco, though.
Exactly.
I ask, is that from Costco? No? Okay, then hamburger.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. I love their hot dogs.
Okay. So a car is broken down on the side of the road. Do you pull over?
Ooh. If I'm late to work, probably not. But if I would love to help someone, but my dad has always, like, taught me, like, you don't know that person.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Maybe that's, like, an Italian
a little
thing.
Scary.
Like, I'm always,
but,
like,
yeah.
Are they up to no good?
Yeah. 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 It's kind of hard to, like, sometimes it's sketchy people, so it depends. But if we were in a good area and I knew my surroundings very well,
I know.
And I'd probably
I've listened
stop.
To too many murder podcasts.
Yes.
I'm like,
yeah.
Yeah.
I'm terrible.
The
at
hitchhiker
that,
situation. like, no.
Yeah. Is your tire really flat?
Yeah. 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 If someone was, like, in the parking lot next to me and I was going to my car and I saw them struggling with their car, I would definitely help.
Yeah.
But pulling over on the side of the road, I'm not too sure.
Yeah.
Depends on the time of the day, too.
That's
yeah,
fair.
For
That's
sure.
Fair.
For sure. Where oh, are yeah. we? What's the scenario? I know.
Yeah.
Anyways. All right. Thanks so
Thank
much.
You.
Of course. I really enjoy this. I'm sorry I talked a little
oh my
bit
gosh,
too much,
no.
but I hope
no.
I hope I explained a lot and good information, and
we're really excited about the treatment.
Yes.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's
Thank
really
you.
Really great news for the community.
Super happy. Yeah.
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 Yeah. All right.
Well, I loved this. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah.
This was so fun.
All right. Bye.
Bye.